That asshole bit got me thinking. Thinking got me remembering. Remembering popped a name into my head. I talked to her yesterday. She said she'd talk to you. She being? Let's leave it at someone you'll want to talk to, said Lanny Joseph. If you still want to learn about that asshole bit.
We do.
We?
As I told you, I work with the poli-
I got that, Doctor, but let me give you some wisdom. Go easy on that. She's not jazzed about talking to you, singular. I did you a big favor and convinced her. But no way will she get officially involved with the cops.
Got it. Thanks for taking the time.
Iggy said your girlfriend's beyond hot, and you've been with her forever. I like faithful people. And also, Bit was a total asshole. Here's the name. She's right by you, in L.A.
Mayo Bernard. I was pretty sure a Mayo was some kind of bathing suit, one of those factoids you have no memory of actually learning. The Internet confirmed that and added dancer's tights to the mix. Artistic woman? I looked her up on the web, found nothing, made the call. A tentative voice trilled,
"Yes?"
"Ms. Bernard, Dr. Alex Delaware."
"Yes?"
"Lanny Joseph gave me your number?"
"Yes, I told him he could."
"This is about Trevor Bitt."
"Yes."
"Could we talk about him?"
"I guess,"
said Mayo Bernard.
"Somewhere basically out in the open."
"Whatever works best for you, Miss Bernard."
"Best,"
she said, as if learning a new word.
"There's a place on Melrose, Kappa. Serves breakfast all day. I'm going to be there by 10.
"See you then."
"Wait a few minutes. Come at 10 after," she said, "so I have time to figure out what I want to eat."
10:10 it is.
"Yes."
A beat.
"Lanny said you're a police psychologist, like on TV."
"I don't actually work for the police, more of a freelance."
"How interesting,"
said Mayo Bernard, with scant conviction.
"I used to freelance as a dancer. Then I taught dance to children. Freelancing always has you wondering, when's the next check coming in? Now I do nothing."
"Ah."
"Make it 10:15, she said. "I'll be wearing orange."
Kappa sat beneath two stories of undistinguished brick office building. Lampshade store on one side, Chinese laundry on the other. The restaurant's front was all glass. Inside, a boomerang-shaped, gold-flecked formica counter faced chartreuse vinyl booths. Bullfighting posters and a wall menu served as art. The young woman behind the counter, white-uniformed with Lucille Ball hair and crimson lipstick, had nothing to do. The pass-through to the kitchen offered a view of a white-capped man smoking an e-cig. What had once been a coffee shop transformed to a place that sold $8 mocha drinks, $6 postum, and omelets, scrambles, frittatas, offered with options like ramps, glassfish, Belgian wheat beer, and sweetbreads. Cheap oatmeal, though. $3, and represented with pride as not steel-cut. A corner booth was occupied by a rabbinically bearded, brooding hipster, genuflecting before a tiny cellular screen. Two other stations were taken up by white-haired throwbacks to the Kerouac era, reading newspapers and spooning oatmeal. A woman in an orange dress sat in the farthest booth, watching me and ignoring a glass of red juice, a mug of something, and a bowl of what looked like lawn shavings sprinkled with fried onions. Painfully thin would have been Mayo Bernard after a month of gorging. She could have been anywhere between 35 and 60. When emaciation sets in, distinctions blur. Her hair was long, white-blonde, frizzy, her face a spray-tanned stiletto. I waved, and she smiled painfully. Enormous green eyes, contours that suggested genetic beauty long eroded. The dress looked flimsy, with glass beads studding a scoop neckline. Alex Delaware.
Myla.
The fingers she offered were flash-frozen shoestring potatoes. As I sat, she said,
"Coffee? They do it great here."
"Sure." I looked over at Lucy. She remained behind the counter and shouted,
"What can I get you?"
"Coffee, any kind."
"Be careful, that includes Jamaican Blue Mountain, $20.
"Thanks for the warning. What can I get for 10?
Crimson-framed grin.
"The world."
"You have African?"
"Do we?"
she said.
"Kenyan's always great."
To Myla Bernard.
"A smart one."
Bernard said,
"He's a doctor."
"Whoa," said Lucy.
To me,
"I feel great. Maybe I shouldn't."
Grinning and giving her hips a rumba shake. One of the old men looked up.
"Someone's son, the doctor? You take Medicare?"
He laughed moistly. His female companion kept eating oatmeal. Lucy brought the coffee, winked, and left. I said, "Myla, I really appreciate your taking the time."
"Yes,"
she said.
"Lanny said the cops were investigating Trevor. I suppose that makes sense."
"How so?" She shook her head, toyed with her salad.
"Confession first. I used to like him. More than like. We were together for half a year."
She poked some more. Up close, mowed grass was alfalfa sprouts and some sort of stunted-looking lettuce. What I'd taken for onions were desiccated threads of a bacon-like substance, maybe from an animal.
"Trevor used to be a handsome man," she said.
"Might still be." "How long ago was this?"
"Ages, eons, light years. 20 real years. I was living in San Francisco, dancing ballet, jazz, and modern interpretive."
Her fork lowered.
"That didn't pay the bills, so I also danced in North Beach clubs."
The mecca of topless. I said, "Branching out."
"That's a nice way to put it," she said. "The money was good, but the decision wasn't."
She placed a hand on a flat chest.
"They convinced me to enhance. Not only did it ruin ballet, it messed me up physically. It was just loose silicone in those days, not even bags. I leaked, got infected, spent 4 months in the hospital, and ended up like this."
"What an ordeal."
"It was a long time ago."
She reached over and touched my hand.
"Life's an ordeal, no?"
"It sure can be."
"Maybe not for you. You seem like a happy man."
"I work at it."
"Yes, it is work,"
said Myla Bernard.
"I gave up on happiness a long time ago. Am aiming for content. I think that's a more mature emotion, no?"
"There's an adage," I said. "Who's rich? Someone content with what they have."
"That's brilliant, Doctor. I'm enjoying talking to you. Wasn't sure how I felt about facing a therapist again. But I'm glad I agreed. So, what's the story with Trevor?"
"That's not clear yet. And even if it was, I'm sorry, I couldn't give details."
"One-way street, huh? No problem. I don't really care about him. Just making conversation."
She picked at her salad. I drank coffee. The hipster left with his cell phone. The old wag watched and said,
"All that ink on him, a walking hieroglyphic."
Lucy laughed. The old woman got oatmeal on her face and wiped it away. I said, "So you and Trevor were..."
"An item, yes, we were,"
said Myla Bernard.
When I first met him, he ticked off some serious boxes. Handsome, super talented, rich too, that never hurts. But it was mostly his acceptance of me. After I got out of the hospital, I was feeling maimed and deformed, and he didn't care. He really didn't.
Another pat of her chest.
I was up front with Trevor. After I got maimed, that was my approach. Put it on the line right away, expect them to bail. Most men did. Trevor didn't. He said he liked me the way I was. I think he meant it, but who knows?
How'd you meet?
Where else? A party. Don't ask where, who threw it, whatever, because I have no idea. I was in serious pain and taking serious painkillers. A lot back then is a blur. All I can tell you is one of those parties that seem to crop up, you get invited, but can't figure out why. I do remember it being in some incredible house, maybe Pacific Heights?
Shrugging.
Amazing mansion, amazing drugs for anyone who wanted them. Coke, pills, heroin, of course weed. Weed was like cocktails. They served doobies on silver trays. I arrived already grocked out, only did weed. It was good stuff, and it totally downed me, and I shrank off to a corner and just sat there. I must have fallen asleep, because I woke up and found this tall, good-looking guy in a blazer, and of all things, an ascot, standing over me, smiling, like he cared.
She lifted another bacon filament with her fingers, murmured,
"Bison, low-fat, calories like halibut."
Nibbled half a thread, put the rest back atop the salad.
An ascot! When's the last time you saw one of those except in a British movie? I thought I was dreaming. Some duke had appeared, was going to say something with an accent and take me off in his Rolls Royce. He sat down next to me, asked if I was okay without an accent, and we started talking, and I didn't wake up. So I realized I was already awake. Am I making sense?
Total sense.
I hope you're right.
She glanced over at Lucy.
Can you pack this up, Angela?
You bet.
The waitress came over, picked up the bowl, shot me a conspiratorial glance.
This is what she always does.
When she left, Myla Bernard said,
Where was I?
You realized you were awake.
Yes, he was very nice, soft-spoken, offered to drive me home, and I said sure. He didn't have a Rolls, but he did have a nice Jaguar, and he walked me to my door, didn't try anything. So, of course, I said yes when he asked for my number. I'm a yes girl, in general. Always had trouble with no. It's made life hard, but I'd still rather be that way.
Keeping it positive.
Keeping it obedient, Doctor.
She sighed.
Okay, full disclosure. I'm a submissive. I hope you don't find that psychiatric or anything.
Different strokes, I said. Long as you stay safe.
I didn't always pay enough attention to safety, but I do now. If you're thinking Trevor was a dominant and that's why we hooked up, he wasn't. He was a normal. In that regard, anyway. No control issues, but I still liked him. Maybe it was because of the gold piano.
I sat there.
Of course you'd have no idea, she said. Okay, one of the clubs, there was this gold piano hooked up to pulleys. A girl would sit on it, and they'd lower her to the stage while she stripped.
Smiling.
We were the showpieces, served up like a meal. Anyway, one of the bouncers used to have a thing for me, and one time I stayed late with him, and he wanted to use the piano for you-know-what. I said sure, but while we were doing it, Billy, that was his name, must have triggered a switch, and the piano started climbing toward the ceiling. By the time we realized what was happening, it was pushing up close to the ceiling. Billy was a big guy, like a football player. And he got crushed between the piano and the ceiling until I finally figured out where the switch was. He didn't die, but he broke a lot of things inside and got crippled. Only reason I was okay is I was a lot skinnier than him, so all the crushing was happening to him.
She pinged a bitten nail against her mug.
After that, I decided always to be skinny. The piano freaked me out. I didn't go back to the club, wanted a different environment. So I started teaching little girls ballet for crap money. I lost my apartment, had to room with some not-so-great people. It was around then that I met Trevor. No control issues with regard to you-know-what. In fact, he wasn't much into it, period.
Asexual?
More like super low sexual, which was fine with me. My body, the way it was, the pain, feeling deformed. Last thing I wanted was someone jumping my bones.
She smiled.
Top of that, he had an amazing house, Victorian, that he restored, close enough to the wharf to walk. At the time, I thought he was my savior.
That changed. She looked out the window, watched cars pass for a while.
It's the same old story. I'm sure you hear it all the time, especially working for the police.
Not sure what you mean.
Relationships, she said. They go bad. With Trevor, it wasn't dramatic. It just crept in. He got more and more possessive. Not physically, just... Okay, here's the thing. We never went anywhere, which was fine with me in the beginning. I was happy to have a refuge. And his house was big, beautiful, and quiet. Trevor drew all day. Then he slept. Then he drew some more. Then he slept. At first, I didn't mind.
What changed?
I got bored, she said. Felt like getting out. Just once in a while, maybe start teaching kids again. 'Cause I'd quit that job. All I was doing was watching TV and videos of dance exercises. I ended up sleeping a lot myself, and it made me tired. So I asked Trevor if I could go out for a while, and he said, don't do it. I was vulnerable. I wasn't ready to stress myself out, so I agreed. Then I started doing it, sneaking out when I knew Trevor would be locked up in his studio. Nothing weird. I took walks. It felt like I landed on another planet. I liked the feeling. But then I'd rush back, afraid he'd find out.
I said, sounds a little like prison.
I guess it does, said Myla Bernard. I guess it was. One night, late at night, Trevor was doing one of his marathon drawing things. Even when he came out of the studio, he'd been super quiet, ignoring me when I talked to him. So I went out and took a longer walk than ever, and when I got back, he was in the doorway, just standing there, no expression on his face. I thought, he's not going to allow me back. But then he stepped aside. And once I was inside, his face got different.
Angry?
No, that's the thing. Angry, I could understand. I was raised with it.
Lowering her eyes.
But that's another story. No, Trevor didn't show angry. He just got cold. Like I was there, in his house, physically. But I didn't matter spiritually, humanly.
Dismissing you.
Exactly, Doctor. I knew I was being punished, but figured it would end. Then when I said I was ready to go to bed, he pointed to a chair and had me sit there while he left. Then he came back with a gun and stood over me.
He pointed it at you?
No, he just held it at his side, she said.
But it was a gun. What kind?
How would I know, she said. I hate guns.
Was it long like a rifle or small like a pistol?
Long, she said. Made out of wood.
I pulled out my phone, called up an image of a 12-gauge Remington. Myla Bernard shuddered.
I hate them. Maybe.
A photo of a deer rifle evoked a headshake.
They look the same to me.
I said, Trevor just stood there holding it.
For a long time, she said, not saying anything. Then he left, came back without the gun, and said, time for bed. And we went to bed.
And that night, he didn't touch my chest. He used to make sure to do that, being super gentle. It was like he looked at me different.
Scary.
I couldn't sleep, terrified he'd bring the gun back and shoot me. I got up twice in the middle of the night. One time I went to the bathroom and threw up. Trevor slept through totally. He was always a deep sleeper. The next morning, he's not talking. He goes into the studio, and I'm sitting there watching soaps. The day after that, he finally left to buy art supplies. I packed my stuff and got out of there. I didn't even want to stay in San Francisco, so I went to the Greyhound station and bought a one-way to L.A., because I used to dance here, too. The Seventh Veil, places like that. But I also made it to the Hollywood Bowl stage for their big 4th of July celebration. I was a stand-in, but that was something. We had these star-spangled costumes.
Did you know people here?
I thought I did, but the numbers I had for them weren't good anymore. The only money I had was in my purse, like $15. I went to a shelter downtown. It was crazy, full of addicts and psychos. But you know, I felt safer there. A few days later, I remembered my checking account, Bank of America. I'd forgotten about it because Trevor had been paying for everything. I managed to get funds wired and found a room in a motel on Hollywood. That was pretty sketchy. Drug dealers out front. All night you could hear sirens. Finally, I located a girl who didn't dance anymore and worked for a lawyer who did disability. He couldn't believe I hadn't applied. Got me a doctor appointment, and that got me signed up. And that's where I've been since.
She smiled.
Stuff happens, right?
Did Trevor try to make contact?
I was scared he would, but no, never, she said. Guess he's not a stalker. Just had a moment.
A gun, I said. That's some moment.
I never even knew he owned one, Doctor. That's what freaked me out. Is he telling himself it's time to kick it up to a new level?
She leaned forward.
You can't tell me? Did he do something really bad with a gun?
All I can say is his name came up.
Wow. I don't wish him bad, she said. But talking to you made me feel a lot better. The police actually suspect him of something. I wasn't crazy to worry. I was smart.
She pretended to object when I paid the check, said,
"If you insist,"
and squeezed my hand when I got up. "Thanks for your time, Myla."
"Maybe I should be the one thanking you," she said. "Maybe this was therapy."
Chapter 17. I phoned Milo at his desk. He said,
"You and your hunches. Just talk to Braun's first wife, Barbara, from Stockton. Not the sharpest in the drawer, and she's not a legal wife. She and Braun lived together for 3 years."
"How'd you find her?"
"Masterful detection. I looked up Barbara Braun in Stockton.
They weren't married, but she uses Braun's name."
"It's her name, too. They're second cousins. He was an orphan, lived with her family for a while."
So that part of his story was true.
But the part about Barbara's illness was a mix of truth and bullshit. She had cancer, but survived it. Chemo, radiation, she couldn't even tell me the diagnosis. Apparently, Hal stuck with her every step of the way, a real prince. In terms of why they split up, all she could say was they ended up different, and that she was the one to initiate. She didn't say initiate, just I did it. She came across as basic, Alex. Maybe even a little impaired.
Hal was there for her, but he claimed she was dead.
I didn't tell her that. Why burst her bubble? She had nothing bad to say about him. Broke down big time when I informed her. Blamed herself, in fact.
Why?
If she hadn't broken up with him, he never would have left Stockton and gotten carried away by big city sin. I asked her about their years together. The picture I got is a couple of poor kids barely scratching by.
rented trailer. Braun pumped gas part-time. Both of them picked crops seasonally. From that to knight in armor, I said. Speaking of which, Braun had hero fantasies way back. Talked to Barbara about joining the FBI, the CIA, the Secret Service. Only place he actually applied was the Coast Guard, but they turned him down. Something about allergies. Any attempts to be a cop? Nothing she was aware of, though in high school he'd been a police cadet. She does recall him participating in a search party for a missing kid. Nothing obviously creepy about his motives. The whole town turned out, and the kid was found safe. Maybe he wasn't drawn to the city by sin, I said. More like expanding his altruistic horizons. Being a big-time hero, but he ends up selling shoes and then messing up his leg? Sure, but it doesn't explain how he ended up on the Corvin's hardwood. I asked Barbara if Hal had spent any time in San Francisco, trying to connect him to Bit. It's not far from Stockton, but she said she never knew him to go there. Speaking of Bit, I told him Myla Bernard's story. A long gun, but he didn't threaten her with it. Just held it and stared at her. She can't tell the difference between a rifle and a shotgun, but wouldn't it be interesting if what Bit showed her was a 12-gauge that he still owns? Easy enough to find out if I could get a warrant to cross his damn threshold. I said, if Chelsea could be documented actually going into Bit's house, could you make a case for a welfare check? On what grounds? Mentally impaired minor sneaks into the home of a person of interest in a homicide. Elegantly devious, Alex. But if she just goes in and comes out, iffy. Maybe a couple of nights' surveillance will help. I get lucky, see the two of them actually make inappropriate physical contact. I can go in there with no paper. Night one, he parked a block from Evada and watched through binoculars from the far end of the block. Chelsea Corvin never left her house. Bit's lights were out. Night two, just after 10 p.m., Bit's front door opened, and the artist, carrying something, got in his pickup and drove away. Too dark to make out details. By the time Milo made it back to his car, the truck was out of sight. He enlisted Binchy and Reed for two more nights. Nothing on Binchy's Sunday watch. 2 weeks had passed since the murder. The Corvins didn't go out for dinner. On Monday night, when Reed arrived, Bit's truck was already gone. No spotting of Chelsea. Tuesday morning, both of the young D's were pulled from Milo's supervision, Reed handling a bar fight in Palms, Binchy catching an armed robbery in Pico Robertson. Milo said, "So much for that. Nguyen says it would have been doubtful without an obvious felony." I worked long days on two custody evals, but found time to recheck social network sites for anything on Hargis Braun and the three women who'd lived with him. Barbara Braun's Facebook page was a skimpy thing. A few relatives, no human friends. The only posted photographs were her and a massive black Newfoundland. Wally was certified as a therapy dog and demonstrated his interpersonal skills by never leaving the side of a small, pinched-faced woman. Barb Braun was dependent on a pair of forearm crutches. Add that to MJ's arthritis, and you didn't need to be Freud. Mary Ellen Braun had seemed healthy. I Googled her anyway. Her LinkedIn listing reached out to retailers, said nothing about health problems. But her name showed up in a support group for women with chronic fatigue syndrome. A man attracted to disability. The impulse was to tag that as pathological. My training leads me to avoid dime store diagnosis. Joining search parties, planting unsanctioned trees, butting in during a domestic. Saving a snake. For all I knew, Hal Braun's taste in women spoke to a rare nobility, a man with ideals and goals, however absurdly romanticized, a poster boy for no good deed. Voicemail on all of Milo's lines. I left messages, but he didn't call back. Maybe 16 days of nothing on Braun had put him in a funk, or his attention had shifted to a more manageable crime. That night, Robin and I had a late dinner at the Grill on the Alley, and were walking to the Seville when my cell chirped. 10:10 p.m. He said,
"Sitting down, amigo?"
"Upright."
"Then maybe you should brace yourself. You're not gonna believe this."
Chapter 18. At 8:49 p.m., Hollywood Division patrol officers finishing their dinner at Tio Taco had responded to an anonymous report of a 415, unspecified disturbance, and driven to the Sahara Motor Inn on Franklin Avenue, just east of Western. Parking in the mostly empty lot, they knocked on the door of room 14. After receiving no reply, Officer Eugene Stargill pretended to peer through a slit in the plastic vertical blinds and see nothing out of order.
"Bogus," he pronounced. "Let's book."
His partner, a gung-ho kid fresh out of the academy named Bradley Buttons, insisted on having the manager check. As Stargill figured out ways of getting back at the pain-in-the-ass rookie, the manager, Kiran Keith Singh, unlocked the door. At 8:54 p.m., Stargill phoned in a dead body, making it sound as if he'd been conscientious. Hollywood detectives Petra Connor and Raoul Biro arrived on the scene at 9:18. By 9:40, a coroner's investigator had gone through the DB's pockets and produced ID. During the brief drive from Wilcox Avenue, the victim's name had sparked Petra's memory, but she couldn't get a handle on it. One of those tip-of-the-mind things. Just as Biro turned off the ignition and she saw the motel, she figured it out. Scanning the homicide list and checking out the details of weird ones was a daily habit for her, though it rarely paid off. This time, it did. She called Milo. He called me. I arrived at 10:48, spotted both of them just inside the yellow tape, bootied and gloved. The air smelled of cheap gasoline and fried food. The motel layout was basic. 15 green doors arrayed to the right, a pitted but generous parking lot. The building was sad gray stucco with a matching warped roof. If the East End of Hollywood ever really got renewed, the value was the lot. The obvious replacement, yet another strip mall. Milo was facing away and didn't notice me. His clothes were rumpled, his hair ragged. Petra stood next to him, slim, elegant, black wedge cut swept back from a finely molded ivory face. She looked like a socialite hanging with the uncle who'd blown his inheritance. She waved. He turned and said,
"As promised, insane."
By 10:50, I was looking at the prone form of Chet Corvin, face down on a pink, blood-soaked polyester carpet. For a hot-sheet Hollywood motel, not a bad room. Management here utilized something minty fresh to disinfect. The fragrance failed to compete with the copper of fresh blood and the sulfurous emissions from relaxed bowels. Walls, covered in flesh-colored vinyl, were freckled with red halfway up and to the right of the corpse. A royal blue velveteen spread that looked cheap but new lay smoothly, neatly, atop the queen-sized bed. A pay-by-the-minute vibrating gizmo, complete with credit card reader, gave off a chromium glare. The 30-inch flat screen facing the bed was tuned to a pay-per-view menu. Adult entertainment. Men's clothing was draped over a chair, calfskin loafers lined up neatly, each stuffed with a precisely rolled argyle sock. Chet Corvin wore nothing but boxer shorts, now soiled, as were his thighs. His bare back was broad and hairless, bulky muscles padded with fat. One hand was concealed under his torso. The nails of the other were manicured and glossy. Two ruby-black holes formed a neat colon on the back of his neck, visible in the thin strands just above the hairline. One wound placed precisely above the other. I said, "Skillful shooting." Milo nodded.
CI says the first would have likely put him right down, straight to the brainstem. After that, the shooter could take time lining up the second.
Maybe a statement, I said. Petra said,
"Such as?"
"I'm proud of my work." Both of them frowned. My gaze shifted to the wood-aping plastic nightstand bolted to the wall left of the bed. A man's alligator skin wallet sat next to two water glasses and a bottle of Chardonnay, Sonoma Valley, Russian River, 3 years old. A label that looked high-end, but I'm no expert. I said, "Date night?" Milo said,
"Heavy smell of perfume in the lav says some kind of party. Petra informs me it's Armani, probably sprayed. Aqua what?"
"Aqua di Gioia," she said.
"I sometimes use it myself." Smiling.
"When I need to wake Eric up."
I said, "Expensive?"
"I get mine at the outlets, but even with that, not cheap."
Milo said,
"Rounding out the picture, we've also got some longish brunette hairs that aren't Chet's on the bathroom counter. The kid at the front desk claims the room was cleaned a few hours before Corvin checked in at 8:11. No one else used it in the interim. Hopefully he's being straight and we're not talking leftover debris."
"I think he is. Nice kid," said Petra. "Goes to college during the day. Just started working here. We're not talking some street-smart, compulsive liar."
To me.
"Anything else occur to you?"
I said, "Corvin drove a Range Rover. Didn't see it out front."
"Wasn't here. We'll check local CCTV, see if we can pick it up."
Milo said,
"No video here except behind the desk. Good shot of Corvin checking in. He looks relaxed. Used his real name, paid with a company credit card."
I said, "Someone else who was proud of himself."
"Fits with what we've seen of old Chet."
To Petra,
"Like I told you, guy was a blowhard."
I said, "Shot dead 38 minutes after he got here. He check in alone?"
"No one else on the video," said Milo. "Whether his amusement for the evening was waiting in the car or she arrived separately is impossible to know at this point. The setup is everyone pulls up to their own door, and for obvious reasons there are no cameras in the lot, except for one at the far end with a view of the rear alley."
Petra said, "Monitoring the dumpsters. God forbid someone should hijack the trash." I said, "His clothes are off and most of the wine is gone, but the bed doesn't look as if it's been used." Milo said,
"We're figuring they were warming up and it never got to the next stage."
"Is that wallet full?"
Petra said, "$300 and some change, plus all his credit cards. Pictures of his kids, too. But not his wife."
"No surprise," said Milo. "Like I said, disharmony ruled his roost."
I said, "So not a robbery?" Petra said, "Unless the Rover was the target." "Take the car and leave all this money? Line up those bullet holes and clean up the casings? Looks more like an execution." She shrugged. "In view of the body in his den, you could be right. But the car was taken."
Milo said, "Maybe as a bonus. Spot the keys, book."
"So how did the murderer get here?"
Silence.
I said, "Are you looking at the woman as a suspect?"
Petra said, "Could be.
Or she and Corvin got invaded. He got shot. She escaped." Frowning.
"Or she didn't. If I find out a female called it in, she gets lower priority as a suspect."
"No 911 tape?"
"No, it came to us on the non-emergency line as a non-specified 415. We've got civilians working the desk. I'll talk to whoever took the call. The body was warm when patrol got here.
so whoever it was called pretty soon after. I said not using 911 could have theoretically slowed the process and given the caller time to gain some distance from the scene. That could fit with Corvin's companion escaping but not wanting to get involved. Milo said, "That, long hair, perfume, this neighborhood, a lady of the night is a decent bet. Easy to see why she wouldn't want to be involved." I said, "A Hollywood hooker using our money?" Petra said, "You'd be surprised, Alex. I've seen girls come into the jail soaked in really good stuff. The wine doesn't look cheap either." "You know it?"
"Nope, but Russian River's a prime Chardonnay region."
Milo said,
"See why he's so useful?"
He peered at the label, ran a search on his phone, whistled.
"That particular year, $79 a bottle."
I said, "So maybe it wasn't a commercial transaction." Petra said, "A tryst with a girlfriend? He's got an expense account and platinum cards and brings her here?" I pointed to the porn menu. "A little bit of sleaze to spice things up." Milo grinned.
"There's a psychological insight. Yeah, why not?"
Petra's slim fingers drummed her forearm. "Slumming for fun? Okay, I can see that." She looked at the body. "Talk about a party with an unhappy ending. We'll do a neighborhood canvas, try to find out if anyone remembers seeing him with a female." Milo said,
"We'll also be looking for Mr. Bit skulking around."
To me,
"I filled her in."
Petra said, "I'll also subpoena his credit cards and his phone."
"I can do that," said Milo, "if you don't mind."
"Why would I mind not dealing with a phone company? Be my guest. But how come you want to?"
"This is your turf, kid. I need your brains on the street."
"Sure," said Petra. "If we're dealing with the same offender as Braun, he's super organized, no? I suppose Bit could be like that. His art's extremely meticulous."
"Familiar with a cartoonist?"
Then I remembered. Before entering the police academy on a lark, she'd worked as a graphic artist.
"You know Bit?"
"I know of him, Alex. One of the guys I went to school with loved his work and used to bring it in for the rest of us to admire. I could see the talent, but I thought it was mega sick." She tapped her foot, took a step closer to the body, retreated. "Even so, that's not what I find interesting. Art and personality aren't an obvious link. It's his stonewalling and the gun story. On the other hand, if Chet Corvin was targeted first by dumping Braun in his house, why would Bit call attention to himself? And why would he go after Corvin here? This scene and what Milo tells me about Corvin's life on the road, there could be a long list of angry husbands and boyfriends." Milo said,
"All true, but I'm not ready to put Bit aside. We surveilled him 4 nights, and it came to zilch. But Sean took it on himself to do a drive-by tonight at 8:30, God bless the lad, and Bit's truck was gone. So maybe he was stalking Corvin. We need to check every camera we can find, see if the truck shows up. That's what I mean about keeping it local."
Petra said, "Raul will love that. You know how he is, makes compulsive look sloppy. If there's something there, he'll find it. If we do get Bit in proximity to the scene, I can't see you not getting your warrant."
"Fingers crossed."
Knock on the open door. A pair of crypt delivery men with a collapsible gurney and a body bag stood outside. One of them said,
"We ready?"
We left as the clacking and sacking commenced. Cool night, thin traffic on Franklin. Some of the surrounding buildings were pre-war and pretty, conceived when Hollywood was Hollywood. The Sahara Motel and others looked like scars on an actress. A dark-haired man in a cream-colored suit approached. Detective Raoul Biro, compact, prone to striding confidently, had one of those faces that didn't age in real time. His hair was black with blue overtones, thick and glossed with something that subdued every loose strand.
his skin as smooth as that of a toddler. I'd seen him at the most brutal of murder scenes. He never looked anything but put together, and tonight was no exception. In addition to the impeccably tailored suit, a baby blue shirt woven by agreeable silkworms, and navy blue suede loafers with gold buckles. Something new tonight. Instead of the usual silk cravat, a braided leather string tie fastened by a polished oval of black onyx. He saw me looking at it.
"From Sedona. I think it's over the top, but the wife's 1/12 Navajo, and she likes it. Usually I take it off when I get to the office and put on a normal one. Tonight I forgot."
I said, "It's a good look, Raul."
"You think?"
"You bet. Texas Ranger comes to L.A.
He laughed.
"There's a TV show for you. How's it going, Doc?"
"Great. You?"
"Better than great. New baby," he said. "Gregory Edwin. Blonde like the wife. Can you imagine?"
"Congrats."
His smile was wide and bright.
"First class baby, meaning he sleeps. We finally got it right."
He looked at Unit 14.
"This is a bizarre one, no?"
To Petra.
"I got us 6 uniforms for the canvas. What parameters do you think?"
She said, "Let's start with Franklin. Go a mile east and west. Nothing shows up there. We can either expand it north-south or just south and concentrate on the boulevard."
"Boulevard's going to have tons of cameras," said Biro. "We could be going through it until who knows when. And unlikely Corbin's going to be walking. At best, we'll see his car passing. At super best, leaving here."
"There's another target vehicle, Raul." She told him about Trevor Bitt's black Ram pickup. Described Bitt and the fact that he'd stonewalled for over 2 weeks.
He said, "Guy sounds nuts."
To me,
"You've probably got a better word for it."
I said, "Not tonight." He laughed again.
Petra said, "You want this to be our case, Milo? Or are we assisting on yours? I want to know in terms of organizing my own mind, as in who notifies the wife and kids."
Milo said, "I'll do it. Tomorrow morning, family's been through enough. No sense waking them up in the middle of the night."
Biro said, "You viewing the wife as a potential suspect, seeing as he was messing with another woman?"
"Nothing points to that, Raul, but nothing says no."
"We get lucky, another domestic murder for hire. Not that it would account for your body in the den."
Milo said, "Alex has always said that pointed to Chet as the likely target."
Petra said, "Obviously, Alex was right. And if Braun was connected to Chet in some way that made her Boku mad, she could have hired a professional to do both of them."
Biro said, "Dump a corpse in Hub's private space. There's a big middle finger for you."
Milo said, "You see that, Alex?"
I said, "I can't see Felice traumatizing the kids."
"Fair enough," said Petra. "But if she's got money separate from his, let's try to find out if she's spending it unusually, as in unspecified cash payments going out."
Milo said,
"There is a decent chance of separate accounts. These people have been separate for a long time."
Chapter 19. As we walked away from the motel, I noticed a young man standing near the office door, picking a cuticle at warp speed. A boy, really, 18, 19. When our eyes met, he looked away.
"The clerk?" I said.
"That's him, Keith Singh."
"You mind?"
"Go for it."
As we approached Singh, he startled and turned to go back inside.
I said, "A second, Keith?"
He stopped, rotated, kicked one ankle with the other.
"Yes, sir."
Lanky, Indian, with shoulder-length black hair, wearing a yellow Lion King t-shirt, jeans, and sneakers. If he was able to grow a beard, it didn't show. But his eyes looked old, bottomed by dark crescents, managing to be weary and wary at the same time. I said,
tough night. Total disaster, sir. My parents didn't want me working here. Now they'll insist. One of my dad's friends owns the place. But Dad says Dr. Warris Singh, he's a dentist, but he's mostly into real estate, isn't careful.
About security?
In general, he said. My parents are more religious than him. They think he could be a bad influence.
His eyes dropped.
I'll have to quit, which is crap. I still have tuition.
Where do you go to school?
The U. I'm out of state, so the tuition's crazy.
Sure is.
I was a late admission. All the work-study jobs were taken. I have to find another one, but the only other sure thing is a restaurant Warris owns. But that place is all the way in Pasadena, and it's crazy busy. Here I can get a lot of studying done.
The gurney was wheeled out of the motel. Keith Singh's eyes saucered. I said, "What's your major?"
"Econ."
His eyes drifted to the yellow tape, moving in the night breeze like a harp string lightly plucked.
"It's crazy, sir. I didn't hear anything."
I said, "You probably wouldn't, too far away."
"Exactly."
"Have you remembered anything else about Mr. Corvin?"
"The guy?" he said. "Like what?"
"Did he say anything when he checked in?"
"He said a lot," said Keith Singh, clapping his index finger and his thumb together. "Talking, talking, talking."
"About what?"
"Random crap. How's it going, young man? Nice night." I kind of blocked it out. He saw my econ book, told me he took micro and macro in college, told me it was too theoretical. He majored in accounting and business management, not econ. I should do the same thing if I wanted to make serious money.
He's there 10 seconds and is giving you advice.
"I'm used to it," he said. "Dad."
What else did Corvin have to say?
"Nothing, sir. Oh, yeah, he showed me the wine."
"He brought the wine into the office?"
"Yeah," said Keith Singh. "In a bag. Said he just got it. It was expensive. Said it was worth it."
Keith Singh licked parched lips.
"He winked when he said that it was worth it."
"What do you think he was telling you, Keith?" The kid colored, chestnut skin turning to mahogany.
"What do you mean?"
"Sounds like he was trying to impress you."
"Why would he do that, sir? More like bragging, like he was used to that."
"Did you see the woman he was with?"
"I didn't see anyone, sir. I was here in the office like I'm supposed to be. He gave his card and drove over. I didn't look at him much. Warris told me that at the beginning. Don't look at the customers. They want privacy."
"Lots of hot dates show up here, huh?" He frowned.
"I mean, people, you know. I mean, Warris doesn't rent by the hour like some other places, but his rates are cheap."
He shrugged. I said, "A lot of customers choose not to spend the night." Keith Singh's Adam's apple rose and fell.
"My parents thought it was a real bad idea. Warris convinced them, but not really, you know."
They gave in. Another ride of the gullet elevator.
"My dad owes Warris money. Warris kind of pressured him."
A flap of black hair fell forward. He tucked it behind his ear.
"I probably would have quit anyway."
"Not happy with the job?"
"It's gross, you know."
Milo said, "No tell, motel." The boy blinked. He'd never heard the phrase.
"All I want to do is study. It's hard enough. My parents wanted me to stay in Tucson, go to Arizona, live at home. I thought I'd have to, but last minute I got into the U from the waiting list, and it's way higher rated, so I wanted to. I have a cousin, a CPA in Boston. He told them where you go makes a difference, so they finally allowed me."
I said, "Good luck with your studies. Is there anything else you can tell us about Mr. Corvin?"
"Just what I said to you."
Looking at Milo.
"He used a platinum, not like some people. They're, you know, looking all over the place, embarrassed, using cash. He was just the opposite. kind of full of himself, you know? Like he wasn't expecting anything bad to happen.
I said, people usually don't.
Oh, man, said Keith Singh. I'm probably going to quit tomorrow. Maybe I'll have to go back to Tucson.
Milo and I continued to the Seville. I said, Chet bringing the wine in, still bagged, could mean he'd just bought it.
I'll tell Petra and Raul to check out nearby liquor stores. Maybe someone's memory will be jogged.
He loosened his tie.
I'm figuring to catch Felice and the kids before they leave for school, say 7 a.m. You up for rise and shine?
You're not, I understand. I said, I'll be there. If you want, I can tell the kids to make sure it's done right, and you'll have more time to gauge Felice's reaction.
That would be great.
At the Seville, he said,
all these years, I still hate Death Knox. And kids. Thanks. See you bright and early. In my case, just early.
I parked in front of the Corvin Colonial at 6:56 a.m. Milo's unmarked sat in front of Trevor Bitt's Tudor. The black Ram was there. A bit of activity on the street, a couple of gardener's trucks pulling up but waiting before unleashing mowers and air guns, neighbors leaving for work or taking in newspapers, a few of them looking at us, most pretending not to. Felice Corvin came to the door dressed in a hip-length tweed jacket, a black blouse, and gray slacks. Hair combed, makeup impeccable, mug of coffee in her hand. No sign of the kids. She said, this is a surprise. Milo said,
can we come in?
No good morning, ma'am. No friendly cop smile.
What's going on, Lieutenant?
Inside would be better.
She looked down the street.
I've got to get going soon.
Milo said,
please,
making it sound like a command. She stepped back and we entered. Footsteps from upstairs pinpointed the kids' location. Breakfast smells, eggs, toast, coffee, drifted from the kitchen. Milo said,
I'm sorry to tell you, Ms. Corvin, your husband's body was found last night.
Long stare. Three blinks.
Body?
He's been murdered, Ms. Corvin.
Body?
She repeated. She stood there, not moving a muscle. Then she teetered, and when Milo caught her elbow, she didn't resist. Her hand pressed against her mouth, and her breathing raced as he steered her into the living room. The kids' footsteps stopped, and Felice Corvin looked at the staircase with panic. Then the noise resumed, and she allowed Milo to sit her down on a sofa. He and I took facing chairs. He edged his closer to her.
I'm sorry for your loss, ma'am.
I don't understand, she said.
Dry eyes, rigid posture, every hair remained in place.
Body.
Flat voice. Her complexion had lost color. Makeup could only go so far.
Last night, Mr. Corvin was found in a hotel, shot to death.
He's always in hotels.
This one was in Hollywood.
The Roosevelt? She said. That's the only hotel I know in Hollywood. It's supposed to be haunted. I went to a concert there a few years ago. The Decamera Society. Baroque music. I loved it. Chet slept through the whole thing. Why would he go to the Roosevelt?
Milo exhaled.
This was more like a motel.
Felice Corvin's face whipped toward him.
Why didn't you say that at the beginning? Why can't you be precise?
We sat there.
She said, you really need to be precise. Precision matters. If the educational system was more precise...
She shook her head.
Who killed him in a motel?
We don't know.
A motel?
Lips curling around the word.
Are you trying to tell me something icky about Chet?